Hello and welcome to the Hash Rugby Chat Show. Hi, I'm Paul, the guy behind Driving Maul. And should we burn it all down? That is going to be the topic tonight. Just seen an announcement by Rugby Australia that they've laid off 70% of their staff, or 75% of their staff, one in three, or three in four, or something like that, for 3 months.
Wow.
As well. So, look, clearly this whole COVID-19 and lockdown business is striking sports hard. We've also seen that USA Rugby has gone into Chapter 11 and basically has gone into receivership or into liquid. So yes, they're in protected kind of situation where they can try and come out of that. So it's all a bit of a mess, folks. And so we'll be discussing all of that kind of stuff tonight. Joining me to discuss that is John and Stephen. John, how are you doing, sir? Oh, sorry, you're drinking.
Timing! Perfect timing. Yeah, I'm doing well. Thank you, mate. I'm doing well.
And Stephen, how are you doing?
Oh, mate, it's always a privilege and a pleasure to be on the TDM and twice in one day.
Wow. Twice, well.
I feel blessed.
You are blessed, obviously. To let everyone know, this you have not missed out on a show. If you're thinking, Paul, where was your YouTube show this morning that Stephen was on? What we have done is we have kicked off a new set of shows, basically a new radio station is what we've started, which might sound a bit grand, but that's essentially what we're doing. We're trying to put together a sports radio station for New Zealand because New Zealand no longer has one. As of yesterday at 1 p.m., sorry, New Zealand's last radio talk show shut down. So there is a big gap, and hence we are trying to fill that gap. So join the New Zealand sports radio shows. They'll be kicking off. The Facebook page will go live tomorrow, where it's all in development at the moment. But we've kicked off the shows initially on Facebook. So if you want to go over there, you'll be able to catch the morning sports briefing. And we'll be back tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. New Zealand time. Obviously, the recording will be there and podcasts to come soon as well, folks. So look forward to all of that. Look forward to your support.
Looking crash hot, let me tell you.
There we go. And the graphics, sorry, that's crash, maybe the right word, rather than necessarily hot, but we'll wait and see. apparently, I've got to be a bit nice about this because this isn't John doing the graphics, this is his son. And so he might actually get hurt by some of my comments if I'm not careful.
If you love it, that's my son. If you don't like it, that's his mother's son.
Covering his bases.
And I will good say, man. not a bad first stab at it, but I do have a few critiques suggestions, should I say. Anyway, folks, look out for that. We are trying to do something that is scarily huge, putting together a whole radio station, not just one set of shows once a day, but basically several hours of content every day is where we want to be within the next 4 weeks by the end of lockdown. So it's a bit of a big target, but hey, that's what we're here for. These are changing times. If you can't do it now, you can't do it ever. So there we go.
Paul, before we move off that particular topic, which I think is great, how about if we say, if anybody's got any thoughts, if they're pleased to hear that we're thinking of doing this, if they're missing the previous radio station that was available, just give us some feedback, either on this channel or, drop a line, correspond with Paul. If you've got any complaints, correspond with Paul.
Any praise, correspond with John.
I was about to say, I didn't know we were getting Mark Watson on as a guest.
That's right.
Look, guys, you got any ideas, any thoughts as to what you would like to see from a sports radio station, then let me know. This is not going to be rugby only. This morning we had sections on the Olympics, cricket, football, and also rugby league as well. So tomorrow I've already there's already basketball news story that we'll be covering off. So look, this is a generic, or I don't know, not generic, a general sports thing. It will have sport specific shows within it as well. It's not all going to be general sports chat. I don't believe that's the way. I think we will have some very specific shows for specific people. But let me know what you would like to hear about, folks. That'd be great to hear.
And it's going to be, it's not going to be business as usual. It's not going to be like every other station. We're going to have fun.
This is yes. There are no rules. The only rule is there is no rules.
That's right. By the way, just for all the viewers and all the listeners, I'd just like you to lean to your window, look out your window, look down the road. If you look way in the distance over there, you might just see the back of Normal as it disappears. So wave it goodbye, because not only with New Zealand Sport Radio, but generally, Normal is gone.
Yes, this is a scary time, folks. But it's also a time of great opportunity as well. So if you want to, if you're in lockdown and you can't be working, well, you know what? This is the one opportunity you've got to just try something new, because in 4 weeks' time you're back in your job, and if it doesn't work, who cares? If it doesn't work, then you might be resigning in 4 weeks' time and have a brand new job. Who knows?
Before we completely move on from that, invest in yourself, invest in your relationships with people, your connections, and be generous and kind.
There we go. Were you zipping your mouth there, Stephen? Oh, you did. Well, yes. How do I make this a multi-denomination show? Folks, thank you. Where am I going? Major League Rugby. They're playing rugby still. Have you noticed this?
No. Really?
Yes, they are. On a computer.
The NBA shut down. Baseball, all the college sports are shut down. How can Major League Rugby be playing? And they're in receivership.
No. Okay, all right. So, folks, we'll get into that in a second. Major League Rugby is a investor-generated and run league. It has got no apart from being accredited by USA Rugby, USA Rugby has no control or say over the running of the league. The league is totally investor led. Okay. They set it up without New Zealand, without USA Rugby being involved. They obviously were in discussions with them and kept them aware of what they were doing. But they set it up entirely on their own without accreditation and got accredited afterwards. So from that point of view, no, Major League Rugby has not gone into receivership. They are solvent and everything. What they've done is they've chosen one player from each team. And they're playing each other on, I think it's Rugby 20, or an online rugby computer game. Esports isn't my thing, so I've not been following it. But were you actually watching any of the games? I should have done, really. But looking at the table, because they're doing a proper league, as in several rounds playing each other. Bottom of the league is San Diego with no wins so far, who were top of the league physically playing, and Gilgronis, who have only won one game in the past year and a half or nearly 2 years, are top of the league and are undefeated so far. So there seems to be a correlation between being good at computer games and being bad at playing rugby. What a surprise, folks. Is anyone shocked by that one?
I'll tell you, that San Diego team, man, they're special.
They, San Diego, as I say, top of the league, haven't lost a game all season, playing actual rugby, comes to playing computer games, but they're not very good at it. Maybe they're spending time training rather than playing computer games. Sure.
Yes.
So there you go. That's my pro tip. That's how we should perhaps be selecting All Blacks now, or doing some sort of some sort of combine. Get all the wannabe rugby players, get them to play computer games. The ones that are good, don't get a contract. The ones that are bad get a contract because, hey, they've been spending too much time training. We appear to have lost John, or at least a picture of John, for now. So Stephen, you've not been following this Major League Rugby development.
No, not really, Paul. But now you've actually got me a little bit interested. I'm going to go hunting after the show this evening. So it's obviously it's rugby content, so we can talk about it a little bit. Listen, if it was marbles rolling downhill, I'd probably want to talk about it.
Now there have been two things have really gone viral under this lockdown. John just we need to get John a tripod and a camera so he can actually not try balancing his phone against a coffee cup. Investors who want to invest in New Zealand sports radio, then please let us know, because we need to buy some kit for John.
John needs to lift the game here. A conscious of being good looking, that's the problem.
Oh dear. The housewife's favourite. I've just stolen from all ever every podcast. But two things have gone viral, basically. One has been Nick Heath's life commentary, which has been, so he's a rugby commentator from the UK. I did an interview with him. So if you head over to drivemore.com, you can see my interview with him. And he's been commentating people crossing the road.
People pushing pushchairs,
people walking their dog, all sorts of things. And it's absolutely hilarious. He's gone viral. He's been, the New York Times has interviewed him, the Washington Post. He's been on New Zealand radio. He's been on Australian radios, USA radio. He's busier now than he was when he was actually working, and he's not earning. And he's not earning any money, which is a shame. So, because it's all on Twitter, he doesn't earn any money from that. Steve, you next time when you get your chocolate bar, get it out of the wrapper before the show, please.
You can see just how fantastically professional this new radio station is going to be. We're going to be all over this professionalism thing, telling you. Right.
Oh, dear, brilliant.
I'm not sure how many of those he's had, but hey.
Me, I'm on my second one. So earlier I did a podcast with Game Day Tourist. So that'll be coming out, soon. He actually edits his, so they might take a while. I was talking about rugby and match day experiences. So go and have a listen. I'll put that on my Twitter feed when it comes out. But the other thing that's gone viral has been marble racing. As you say, now a lot of people haven't come across marble racing before. Me, I've watched it many a time. I've wasted many an hour watching marble racing and watching the Marble Olympics. Marble racing, the YouTube channel has 700,000 followers on it, and some of its videos have been watched 2.5 million times.
Wow.
So for those of you who thought it was just a bit of a joke, no. Those guys, actually, their living is, there's two of them, they're brothers out of Holland, I think it is. One of whom has autism and he really loves marbles, they have made a YouTube business out of racing marbles and commentating about it. So they've done the Marble Olympics in the past. Currently they are racing the Marbula F1. They have got some fantastic tracks, and they have a conveyor belt that makes them, so they do several laps. Sometimes they have sand in them, sometimes they don't. They've got jumps and all sorts of things. So go check out Marble Racing. They've got a fantastic channel. So rugby.
I was about to say, Paul, there's also the alternate, there's downhill marble racing as well. That's cross-country marble racing downhill. That's pretty exciting as well.
Well, in their Marble Olympics, they even have surfing underwater racing and all sorts of things. Yes, they've really gone
underwater marble racing.
Yes.
Wow.
They have a Perspex tank that they fill with water and they race the marbles. Yeah.
I'm gonna look out that window again.
How desperate are we?
Oh, and now the one I really enjoy, the one actually I found really quite fun, was they also had marble rafting races. So then they have little rapids to go down and stuff. It's brilliant.
So next man is betting on these marble races, and there'll be handicaps. And things are getting desperate now.
I'm Team Snowball. Okay, so that's my team. If you want to know,
of course.
This is 15 minutes. I'm not getting back.
Okay.
I bet you can't wait to tune in tomorrow's to New Zealand Sport Radio.
That's a news show. It's not an opinion show. This one's an opinion show. Anyway, so folks, there's been a bunch of people, and Stephen, you've been one of them, who says, basically, look, is this an opportunity for World Rugby to basically restructure rugby around the world? As we just sort of mentioned already, that the USA Rugby has gone into Chapter 11, or filed for bankruptcy. Now, Chapter 11 isn't insolvency. The accountants come in, they try and save the company, but it gives them protection from their creditors whilst they go through and see if they can continue as a going concern. So various airlines have gone into Chapter 11 and come back out again and existed, like Delta Airlines, etc. So this isn't necessarily the end of USA Rugby in its current form, but clearly it's in trouble. Now, this is a company this is a union that I think, I can't remember the number, but I think it was $5 million that they borrowed from World Rugby because they were going to go bust when trying to run the Rugby World Cup Sevens tournament in San Francisco. And so World Rugby gave them enough money so they didn't go bust at that point, and also put Augustin Pinochet in as a board member to make sure they got their money back.
Yeah.
Right. They've just gone into Chapter 11. They didn't get their money back. So clearly that's a problem. As we talked about earlier, the ARU have laid off 75% of their staff for 3 months. All other staff are
permanently
for 3 months.
Okay.
Their staff are either having lower hours or taking a pay cut, Raylene Castle has taken a 50% pay cut, meaning she's gone from 800,000 Aussie dollars down to 400,000.
Hard times.
People kind of say that, but at the end of the day, you budget according to your income, right? So your mortgage and all your other outgoings are with an expected income. If you lose half your income, doesn't matter if you're earning $1 million or you're earning $50. If you've budgeted for that much and you lose half of it, you're in trouble, right? You're going to have financial issues. So yes, she's still earning a lot of money. That's true. Don't get me wrong, but her outgoings were probably fairly high as well. So that's happening there in 10 out of the 11 sides, 10 out of the 12 sides in the Gallagher Premiership have given 25% pay cuts to their players. One of the other ones have done pay cuts, but haven't said how much. Exeter Chiefs, anyone that haven't. You've got the SRU, I think, was 80 million short. The RFU are between 50 and 100 million short because of the lockdown. Presumably, Welsh rugby, Irish rugby will be the same. New Zealand Rugby Union has just cancelled all representative rugby below the Meistertown Cup and Farrah Palmer Cup, and we have to wait and see whether those two survive to save $20 million. The All Blacks coaching staff have taken pay cuts, and players are in discussions currently about pay cuts as well. I've not heard any news out of South Africa yet, or Argentina, but clearly what we're seeing here is a lot of not just well unions and clubs, all under serious financial distress currently. World Rugby has basically got one of two choices, well maybe three, but one or two choices. One of them is they can try and bail out these various unions and keep situation normal, or they can turn around and go, you change like this and we'll bail you out, or they can just let them fall and put them back in their place afterwards. So you've got three choices there, John. Do you let it all fall and burn to the ground and rebuild? Do you force change on them? Or do you bail them out and look after them? What's your choice?
Can I say that for once I came to one of our discussions without a formulated opinion? I came to hear what your thoughts were, gentlemen, because there's a lot that is wrong with the game, and we maybe wrongly so, we focus on that many times about what could be better, but there's also a lot that's good about our game. And when you burn it all to the ground, you need to be careful what you lose in the fire. So I'm torn.
So Stephen, have you got an opinion as to which one of those three options you think Brett Gosper and Bill Beaumont should be trying to take?
Well, first of all, let's address the elephant in the room, which is the virus itself. A lot is going to depend how long it takes to bring these numbers down, because I really can't see anything getting off the ground until these numbers start to dissipate, guys. It's as simple as that. You know, in New Zealand here, we're in our own little bubble down here. We could probably eventually decrease a lot of these numbers and turn it around. But this COVID-19 is always going to be out there. There's always going to be the risk that it flares up again, guys. And I think that's the problem when we sort of look at overseas modules where there's bigger populations at the minute. Boy, if I see anything even starting remotely in New Zealand, I think it's almost like on a semi-professional basis. I actually think it's almost going to go back. Your top players are almost going to go back to like a mitre 10 cup status. But, you know, guys who play the game for love are probably just hoping they can keep their jobs at the minute. So, unfortunately, I kind of feel like a spectator watching a really uncomfortable movie at the moment, hoping for the best, but really really scared for its future. Because I'm like John, I love the game. I'm really passionate about the game, and boy, I'll tell you what, if I found out there was a game being played across the road tomorrow, I'd probably go across and watch. That's how desperate I am to see any sort of rugby. I've had friends who have moaned about Super Rugby texting me over the last couple of weeks going, man, I'll never moan about Super Rugby again. I'm going to go. And that kind of cracks me up. It also makes me think, you know, just for the broadcasters out there, you know, less is more. Maybe look at a much shortened season where we are hungry to watch the code again. A little bit like the NFL, which only goes for, what, three months?
Six, 16 regular season games. From 2021, there'll be 17. And if you make, if you're a wild card, you'll play a wild card, and you make it all the way to the Super Bowl. Wild card game, first round, championship playoff, and the Super Bowl. So if you go through the wild card round, you will play 21 games in a season. If you win the Super Bowl, but you got a bye in the wild card round, you'll play 20. And I that
thought,
is
I
it.
Thought, John, I thought it was 16 rounds, but you had two byes.
No. Yeah, so the whole season is not 16 weeks because everybody's got two byes in that time. Because you play a Thursday game and you may play a Monday night game. right? So they give you a break somewhere along the line to be able to play those off games, and some games are in London and stuff like that. So, but yeah, the maximum number of games that you will play if you make the Super Bowl is 21 games, or 20, depending on how high your seed was in the knockout rounds, in the playoffs, as they call it. So, yeah, they generate all of that money and all of that revenue and all of that interest off 20 games.
Yeah, guys, there might be a – I was going to say, Paul, if I can just jump in there, there might be a situation where, as it pays the contracts, it's pay for play, so to speak. You don't get a full contract, because to rebuild the game, it's probably going to take about, to get back to this status, is going to need a whole lot of things to happen in the background. But on a smaller scale, to get things up and running again, I think we're probably looking at a module of pay for play and whatever the broadcaster at the time can put out there. I think maybe the days of somebody going on a sabbatical and being contracted for through to the next Rugby World Cup, whatever, I think those are well and truly maybe gone down the tubes. Who knows? We actually may have seen our last Rugby World Cup for a very long time, guys.
Well, hang on. So let's just wind in a couple of things here. On that. So to give people an outlook as to where we're likely to be over the next several months is we're in lockdown here, as are other countries. That each country has got to get itself out of lockdown and allow people to go back to work before we can have sport, right? So, but beyond that, the New Zealand tourism minister, now admittedly he wasn't talking with the voice of the government. It was his personal opinion, nothing more than that. Was that we're between 12 and 18 months away from international travel reverting to normality. Because of we need basically a until we have a injection thingamajig,
vaccine.
That's the word. Thank you.
Just by the way,
everything
that's happening now in the world is merely trying to hold the North Sea back, like the little Dutch boy with his finger in the dike, right? And is trying to hold this deluge back until the vaccine comes.
So that's the thing. Now, on the assumption that, I mean, people are talking like a 12-month thing, so we're talking into early, maybe mid next year. So on the assumption that whether we get something produced, B, it gets through trials, C, it can be manufactured in enough quantities, and D, it can actually be injected into people, and then in time, next year, we have the Olympics obviously been moved by a year, which means it clashes with it's on at the same time as the Lions Tour, but the Lions Tour game's at 1 a.m. Japan time. So there's going to be very few Olympic events at that time. So they don't clash from a TV point of view. Also, Christopher Edwards Bay points out that's going to be when the Women's Rugby World Cup is on as well. So in New Zealand. So two rugby events are going to be on at the same time as the Olympics next year, if everything stays as is. Now, Stephen was talking about there that we've perhaps seen our last Rugby World Cup for a while. I can see the Women's Rugby World Cup being a casualty, but I France 2023 has to happen. Otherwise, the game will go, World Rugby will go bankrupt. It needs that injection of cash once every 4 years. Otherwise, the game is in real financial issues. At the moment, it's distressed, but it's not in critical state. So I disagree with Stephen there. I think we will definitely have France 2023. As far as players going back to pay for play, at the super or definitely at the international level, I can't see that happening because they will just go overseas. Sure, they can't go overseas for 12 months, but in 12 months' time, they'll just go. So you have to give them multi-year contracts.
Can I just point something else out as well here, is that we have got used to a certain level of rugby, And there can be all sorts of arguments about the style of play versus the past, whatever. But there's no doubt that if you compare players from the 80s to the players now are bigger, stronger, faster, fitter than they were back then. And that's no detriment that I'm saying towards those players, because they had to fit the rugby around their job, right? Now we've created an environment of professional players where they can put in not just one pre-season's worth of work while they're getting paid. They can put in the physical training every day, 5-6 days a week before the season. They can build on a base and increase their base over a period of years, which brings us back to what you were saying, in that if you don't give them multi-year contracts, then you don't allow them to develop that level of fitness and strength and size and endurance and everything that is now so much part of the game. So if you take that away, you need to then accept that the sheer athletic standard of the rugby is going to drop, because guys are going to need income, and they're going to need to be outside of the season. They're going to need to have an income. So they won't be able to put in the same quality of work that they put in now.
And that's why the Meistertain Cup teams that are successful are the ones that have a high proportion or a high number of Super Rugby players, is because the club players are just not conditioned to the same level as Super Rugby players are. So it doesn't matter how good you are, because you're having to hold down a job, you're not getting paid. You don't get paid to play club rugby, or if you do, it's not a livable wage. So you have to have a second. You have to have a job of some sort. So, but yes, I can see the Meistertain Cup going to a pay for play. But the problem with that then is, if you get a season ending injury, then you have to work. Now, Stephen, someone we talked about before, who played club rugby, and I think a bit of Meistertain, was had a manual job, and when he hurt his hand, he was unable to do that manual job. So. Whilst his employer was happy to do that, take that opportunity once, after a while, he's got to say, look, mate, you keep breaking your hand, you keep not being available for work. I only have five employees here. I can't carry an extra one who's injured half the time.
That's right.
So,
I also fear for the actual amateur game, the club level game. I think a lot of clubs are actually going to go to the wall over what's happened. If you think about it, there's a lot of guys who they've got the time allowed to go and play rugby, but you know, you get people who start losing their job. Playing club rugby is going to be the last thing on their mind. I can see a lot of casualties in that respect, guys. At that club level. I think some clubs will go to the walls.
I think it's going to be a bunch of clubs that are going to struggle to actually put teams out. And this is something I actually haven't thought about until now. But if you think Otrahonga, I think, had five players from overseas last year. Hau Tapu had a couple. Tairua, who are in a Heartland Championships, not even they're a much lower level of club rugby. But they had 12 overseas players last year who were here on one-year visas for the lifestyle. Now, there were a couple of the players who were playing in the Waikato League. No, they were over here because, one of them went back and got a job with Leicester Tigers. Another one actually got himself a Meistertain Cup contract. So they're a much higher level. But those players just can't come now. So even if we do, because the way I think that the New Zealand season will go is that we won't see Meistertain Cup and Farah Palmer Cup. We might see Farah Palmer Cup. We won't see Meistertain Cup. And we'll have the club season played in that window. Because the clubs will, and that will allow the clubs to get the money over the bar to keep them alive. But they're not going to have those foreign players. So clubs that used to put out two teams might have to just put out one. And clubs that could only just scrape together one team are going to find it really difficult to maybe club rugby might have to go to tens in some games.
Well, to me, my thoughts, they're starting to crystallize listening to you guys, but to me, the most important thing to focus on, let's start with New Zealand, right? The most important thing to save is club rugby and schoolboy rugby. Because in the long term, if you break and you lose a season or two seasons, you lose young people out of the game that may never come back, right? So I think it's absolutely vital that even if we're playing Christmas time, that we get some kind of club season, even if we sacrifice summer touch tournaments, and we do what's called in New Zealand the muster, which is for the youngsters in club rugby. So for those of you who aren't familiar with the system in New Zealand, the younger kids, the primary kids, mostly play at club level. Then they play school rugby at high school level. And then they come back to the club to play at the senior levels or even rep levels under 20s, for instance. The point being that if you don't have that muster, which is where they sign all the youngsters up under the age of 13 from sort of 5 or 6 years old, if you're not giving them that environment to play the game this year and into next year, then you lose all of that interest. Then they start bleeding away into other sports. Or worse, they start bleeding away into e-gaming, which is what you're trying to actually, you know, it's not so bad if they're going into something like rowing or something, you know, that's good for them. So from the perspective of what is important for the long-term life of the game, that to me is the most important, that the clubs can go, because the clubs can at least partly survive if they get some help from the local councils on their rates and stuff like that, and maybe some help on some of the fees that they might be paying for the fields to be cut and stuff like that. They can survive on subs and what they get over the bar if they really tighten their belt, right? And if you have to do things like say to the guys, listen, sorry, but we can't give you hot showers after the game. Well, you know, this is the year where we either freeze or we stink, you know? So, this, you know, there's all sorts of ways, but the clubs can cobble together at least some kind of season across all these grade levels, all these age levels, things like that. But you've got to keep that flow of players coming through the game, because that's the lifeblood of rugby. The lifeblood of rugby is not the All Blacks, and it's not the Super Rugby, and it's not the Mighty 10 Cup, and it's not the Lions. The lifeblood of rugby is the youngsters coming through the game. Do you agree, Steve?
Listen, I was just thinking to myself, God, isn't there a certain irony about what you just said, John, when you think about everything that's been thrown at the All Blacks, but the thing that could possibly save the game is junior rugby and club level. I just think there's a certain irony about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. From a participation point of view, from a fan point of view, it's club rugby and youth rugby that is the lifeblood. From a financial point of view, it's the All Blacks that are the lifeblood. But we can borrow money. We can't borrow kids. We can't borrow players. We can't borrow fans.
No.
Right? But you can go to a bank and you can borrow cash for a short while and you can pay it back. So hence, that is sacrificial. That is something you can sacrifice for the short term. For the long term, the All Blacks are essential to New Zealand rugby from a financial point of view. But
I mean,
with the lack of international travel, they're not playing for the next. November is optimistic, if you're at the absolute earliest.
You know, if we just step back for a moment from the whole concept of professional sport, and we think about whatever game it may be. Yes, we have this massive infrastructure and maybe at the very pointy end of it when it comes to money and salaries and ridiculous amounts are the footballers and maybe golfers and tennis players when it comes to these, you know, unbelievable hundreds of millions of euros or whatever it is that they end up earning over their career. But at its root, the most important thing about sport is participation. It's not watching it, it's participating. And what we're having now with what's happening with us is not only are we not getting to watch, we can't participate. And what happens is if we lose the ability to watch, we might lose revenue in the short term and not be able to play those high-end salaries, and we don't see a quality. But if we don't have participation, in 5 to 10 years, you don't have a sport, right? Because it's the participation that is the key. We want our kids to play because it is good for them, and it happens so that a very small number of them that play as kids end up playing international level or playing international football or whatever it may be. But actually, sport is about playing sport.
I think that's the European and kind of non-USA model. I think if you look at, because I mean, a lot of people participate in the sports that we watch on a weekend basis. In the USA, I think when you got things like NFL, the number of people actually play American football is tiny, because they all drop out. They might play a little bit at high school and then or before that, but they don't play on. The number that play at college, again, minuscule compared to those that actually, compared to how many people there really are. So I think there's a different model in the USA to the rest of it. I think perhaps one of Super Rugby's issues has been it's been trying to copy the USA model, which is a very different style. Now, does that mean there aren't things you can learn from the USA sports? No, there are definitely stuff you can learn from it, about fan engagement, about running. What do they call the when you the boot parties in your car parks and stuff?
Tailgating.
And there's all sorts of things like that can be learnt and borrowed. But fundamentally, there is a different structure than it is in the sort of European and by that I include kind of your New Zealand's and Australia's, relatively recent culture, but from a sporting culture point of view, it's a different style. But
there about the NFL, Paul, is one of the reasons why they fear for the future of the NFL, because 30, 40 years ago, the participation at the lower levels was way higher. So still, I was in the States 18 months ago, and I got to attend a Friday Night Lights high school football game in just outside San Diego. And it was quite an experience, actually, to see the sort of community engagement for this game. And it was a good team that I was there with, the people, their son was playing, and I was watching this game, and, you know, and just getting that whole experience. But once upon a time, there was far more small ones playing what they call tag football, where you like ripper rugby, where you pull the tag off, right? And there was far more involvement of younger guys. Now, with all the concerns about concussion, what's happened is youth participation in football has dropped dramatically. And it still remains one of the potential routes out of poverty, especially in the black community, where along with basketball, baseball, football can be a route out if you're highly athletically gifted. But so far as football is concerned, the irony is that in the USA at the moment, the major participation sport for youngsters is soccer, both male and female, right? Because there's not the same concern about concussion injuries. But what is that going to mean in 20 years' time for the NFL? That's another story, right? Because not only does it affect you from the perspective of the supply of players, but it also affects you with the supply of supporters.
Yeah. So one of the things that's a stat that I heard recently was that someone is 60% more likely to be a fan of a sport if they were a player of the sport.
Yeah.
So if you played the sport as a kid, you're 60% more likely to become a fan of that sport as an adult. So hence, getting your sport into school is absolutely essential.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So in the United States, they do place a high premium on sport, but they have a wider base. So for them, track is a big deal. and some of the other sports, swimming or whatever it may be, depending on which high school you are, but they have a broader base of representation, right? So something like basketball is very popular, but of course you have a small squad of your senior team and your junior team, the varsity and the junior varsity teams. So they spread their interest and their involvement. You know, that schools have like a what they call, not an academic director, they call it athletic director at a school, not just at a college, that directs the whole, all the sports. And, you know, so there is an emphasis on youth sports in the States, but it's just kind of spread wider and the NFL involvement is dropping. Now we're facing with rugby, everything is stopped. All the rugby is stopped. And the sad thing is that when this all becomes available again and we open up, it's not as if e-gaming has had to miss out.
No, and e-gaming, or certain e-gaming, has had a massive shot in the arm. So, drugs reference. Perhaps that's not the best way to do it. All right. But has a real big boost. So, for example, racing games. So a whole bunch of people have very quickly turned around and put together racing events between e-gamers and Formula One, IndyCar, NASCAR, Formula E, which is the electronic one, not esports. So all these real-world drivers are taking on gamers in games, and they're getting big audiences watching those, because not only are you getting e-game fans, but you're also getting Formula One fans, IndyCar car fans, and it's a way that these fans are getting a taste for esports, and they're seeing their heroes get beaten by esport gamers, right? The esports guys are driving faster than Hamilton, or I'm trying to remember his first name. I'm not a racing car fan, but
Lewis,
there we go. Lewis Hamilton, or whoever was actually taking part. I don't know if Lewis Hamilton was, to be fair. But they're seeing the e-gamer actually win and take the prize money. So one of the kind of unique things about the Formula One, NASCAR, etc., is that they, especially in Formula One, you're restricted to how many laps testing you can do. Hence, a lot of testing is done via simulators. At the end of the day, esports racing is essentially simulator racing. So these guys have actually got, at least for them, they've actually got some experience of this. If you take a golfer, for example, trying to play e-golf, they won't necessarily have ever played that. If you take a rugby player playing e-rugby, again, it's a joystick. It's not physically running around. There's no reason they should be good at it, really.
Right.
At least you can see the crossover with motorsport. And you can see why that would get a real boost from this time.
But guys, getting back to your first question, as we've gone sort of on a circuitous route, do we tear it down? Do we start again?
I think one of the things that Stephen and you probably both touched on is the, whilst I think from a macro level, I would burn it down. But that's easy to say when you're looking at it from 1,000 feet, when you actually get down in the grass and go, actually, you know what, that means that Joel, that is the media manager at Waikato that I know, loses his job. That the ex media person that I've dealt with, the ex player that I've interviewed, he will lose a year's salary. Now, because don't worry, he'll get a job again, but it might take a year for it to step up and him to actually get real money. That human damage means I would actually find burning it down really difficult. Option two of trying to force change, you get bailed out if you agree to change, is the way I'd want to go.
just something that just came into mind. I think it's important what you actually – I think John touched upon a good thing before. I think it's important what you actually save from that fire. And I think you save club rugby, you save junior rugby. That's the most important thing that you save from this fire. I mean to say, the guys who have all been professional, listen, they're all adults. You just got to go out and get a real job until you're basically time to reestablish yourself again. But from that grassroots up, it's going to take a little bit of time to re-sow that, guys. And I think, yeah, maybe don't let everything burn. I mean to say, there's some things I'd gladly see absolutely burn. I mean to say, the structure of the season, for starters, is just absolutely hopeless. They can burn all it likes for all I care.
But when I say burn, it's more the administration, the union. The union has to disappear for that. I would say, yeah, but changing the season, that's a forced change with a bailout. But burn is actually the actual structure, the actual administration structure is going. And I think that personnel loss, I think I would struggle with.
How long is it going to take Great Britain to recover from this, Paul?
Great Britain?
Yeah.
Are you talking as in from
Great Britain and Europe?
Okay, so it took China about 3 to 4 months to get things sorted, but they can bring in draconian laws and force things. So
they can shoot you.
Yes, they can shoot you.
Yeah, they can shoot you.
They didn't.
And nobody's going to do anything about it. So everybody in China knows that if you push against the system hard enough, you can wind up dead and your family wind up dead. So it's a different level there, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So they managed to impose. I'm not suggesting that they took everyone out and shot them who was ill. Okay. To get rid of the virus. No. But. They can enforce draconian measures, whereas in Europe it's less palatable to do so. So I think them turning it around in 12 months and in 12 weeks and getting on top of it in 3 months is ambitious. I think we're looking at probably a 4 to 5 months to just sort of get things under control. Now, as you say, international travel is out the window for the foreseeable future. One of the things I've heard quoted is that 10% of the New Zealand workforce is working from home currently. Okay?
Wow.
Which is approximately 200,000 people. Okay? So there's a lot of people on LinkedIn, if you're on LinkedIn, going, oh, look, we can all work from home. Well, yes, you and the people you kind of mix with who are office workers can. But 90% of the population cannot. You've then got a chunk of essential workers that are working, I don't know how big that is, whether that's 20, 30%, but I'm just fingering the air there. So what we're talking about here is somewhere as guesswork, folks, but 50 to 60% of the working population, or the employed population, or the working population, is not working currently. We are something around about running at 50% production, and income, and things flowing through the economy. That is a massive loss. So, there is going to be an economic impact to this. Now, it's been needed. Don't get me wrong. I'm not one of those people who suggests that the economic impact was so big we should not lock down. Okay, I don't believe that. But we just need to be aware that there is an economic impact to this, and that will have an impact on sport, on sponsorship, on people's ability to buy tickets. Now, I think we are going to see an uptick in, initially at least, in fan numbers, okay, in people turning up to games, because there has been that distance makes the heart grow fonder, blah, blah, blah. And as Stephen says, people are saying, I want to go. So I think we are going to see an uptick in whether that's a dead cat bounce and it drops off again soon afterwards, whether that can be maintained, I don't know. But I think we are going to see an uptick in that, even with people's incomes being impacted. I'm guesswork, finger in the air, 5 to 6 months for Europe to get on top of this.
Stephen, what's your question about how long it will take to get to the end of this crisis? Or are you talking about how long it will take for them to recover economically after the virus is dealt with?
Yeah, there's a lot of questions there's a lot of layers here, guys. A lot of layers. Even before we get to the rugby, we can speculate when something may start again, but there's a whole lot of other layers just to even get to sport before that even happens again, guys. So boy, there's so much to play out. It's quite interesting being a spectator with this.
Look, if it takes 12 months to get a vaccine, our borders may be closed for 12 months, right? At least when it comes to the kind of mass travel that will be required for international sports. So if you want an international team to come here, you might need to fly them in on a private charter from Australia. And then they've got a quarantine for 14 days and then be tested, right?
And
so if I can just put some ideas here, the thing that I think that can be addressed, the thing that can burn is the fat, right? And there's a lot of fat, that a lot of gravy in the trough that people are bellying up to, right? There is no reason, unless you're 6'4 or taller, there is no reason why you have to fly business class from Auckland to Wellington, right? There is no reason why all the bigwigs in New Zealand rugby need to fly to Dunedin for every test match that's played down at the bottom of the South Island, right? Sure. A representative, but you don't need the whole board there. And it's almost been accepted that this is one of the perks, like an old boy network, that you'll get first business class tickets down to wherever the test match is. And I'm not just saying New Zealand, it's all over the world. You'll get first class or business class tickets to wherever the game is played. You'll be put up in a hotel, a five-star hotel, and you'll get sit in the president's suite and all of this. All of that can be cut, right? One representative of the board, put the money where people need it. Another one, players. I know they're big. I know they need extra long beds. Do they have to stay in five-star hotels?
Yeah.
I mean, will it affect their academic, their athletic performance? If they stay in a four-star hotel that has good food, you work on the menu, the right size beds, does it have to be a five-star hotel?
John, I've got to tell you, it's very hard to invite a female up to your room and you've only got a little bed, mate. Seriously.
We've lost John, unfortunately. Looks like it's frozen on a phrase. It's frozen on us. This is what happens if you live in the wild. You see, you have poor internet connection. Now he's got. I mean, yes, there will definitely be trimming cloth to fit. To fit your budget, that's going to happen. Players, you have a choice. Do you want to take a salary cut of X amount, or you want to take a salary cut of a smaller amount? But you know what? All trouble from now on is going to be it's going to be on in economy, etc. So, that side of things, has got to be could do with being there is room for changes. And I caught John saying call him again. I can't because it's not anyway. So the so there will definitely be trimming of cloth to fit budget that we'll see. But it's going to be interesting. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what we can, what we can't cope with, do going forwards. Rugby is. This is what I talked about Nick Heath with, okay? People say, look, it's just sport. It is sport. It is just sport. But it is also, it's a lot of people's livelihoods. Whilst your Skies and your New Zealand rugbys, they will survive, right? They'll come through. Whether I think or not New Zealand rugby should be burnt to the ground and replaced is irrelevant. It will survive. The people that are going to really hurt are... the journalists who are contractors, the cameraman who's a contractor, the security guards, the person who runs the coffee stand, all these people only get paid if they work.
Yep.
They're the guys who are really hurting at the moment. So it isn't just a sport. They want this. They need it back up and running to earn, to pay their mortgage, to pay to buy their supermarket groceries, etc. So yeah, a lot of people say, oh yeah, do all these other things first. Sport doesn't matter.
Yep.
It doesn't. It doesn't. I agree, but it does as well.
Paul, so many layers, Paul. I know even just before I got on, I was reading a little bit of the social network, and there was a piece that the New Zealand Herald had on their Facebook, and I'm starting to come to the conclusion that all they seem to do is have clickbait articles, and it was a piece about rugby players, how they're going to have to take a pay cut or maybe go semi-professional. And boy, some of the comments you get from other people are just absolutely horrible. You know, these guys are earning a living just like anybody else, but you made a really interesting point about all the other layers that go with that. If we might jump up and down about seeing a professional rugby player, but you're dead right. There's some book that for him to get there, there's a whole lot of people underneath that layer getting paid, eh? It is crazy. It's quite a moronic way to look at things, really.
One of the things I talked about when I talked with, is it John Edwards, the ex-Blues and Auckland player who's over in Bordeaux now?
Oh, Joe Edwards, yeah.
Joe, not Joe. So I did an article with him looking at a week in the life of a rugby player. And one of the things he mentioned was going for massages about twice a week that's paid for by the Blues. That masseur has suddenly lost 20 to 30 players who come and have a massage every week. That's going to be a big chunk of their pay, of their business, has just disappeared. And that's even when it comes back, even once once normality has sort of stood back up again. These people there's an awful lot of layers, an awful lot of people here in professional sport. It's not a small thing anymore. Hopefully we've given, hopefully everyone, you enjoyed the banter at the first 15 minutes where we just had a bit of a laugh. We have got a lot more serious as the show's gone on. Hopefully we've made you think, and I'd love to hear your thoughts and comments down below in the chat. Please also do check out this new radio, sports radio station or whatever it's called, whatever you think it's going to be that I'm stepping up. 8 a.m. New Zealand TDM. Tomorrow.
I've got a name. TDM Sports.
TDM Sports, maybe. But it's not just rugby, that's the point. But maybe TDM Sports. Join the morning sports break briefing tomorrow. It's from 8 p.m. But you can always watch the recording. It'll be about 15 minutes and get you up to speed on all your sport. So do check that out. It's over on Facebook. A podcast will be coming soon. Thank you very much, Stephen. Thank you very much, John, if you're watching. It's been an absolute pleasure, as always. And good night. I can't say, you know what? I can't. My old outro used to be, enjoy whatever rugby you're watching this weekend. I can't say that anymore.